Today, by the mercy and potency of Sri Gurudev and Gauranga and Srila Rupa Goswami, we'll be exploring the 10th verse of Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita. Let's begin by reading Srila Prabhupada's translation. In the Shastra, it is said that of all kind types of fruited workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take to devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prem, pure love, Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her kund, lake, is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as his most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radhakund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, uppercut bhava, when the loving service of the divine couple Shishi Radha Govinda, who perform their Astakaliya Lila, the eightfold eternal Vedic pastimes. Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radhakund are the most fortunate people in the universe. First point we need to be aware of is that much of what Prabhupada is giving as translation is not in Rupa Goswami's verse. It's in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura's commentary on the verse. So we find that there is a need in this day and age, in particular, because the degradation is progressing so rapidly, that the acharyas have to really spell things out for the particular audience that they're dealing with. We saw that in the fourth verse of Upadeshamrita. Neither Rupa Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur felt it necessary to say that the food should be prasadam. It was just assumed in those days. You're not going to give anybody any as an act of love, you're not going to give anybody else anything but prasadam. But Prabhupada, realizing the nature of the time, he didn't talk food. He mentioned prasadam. So what Prabhupada is bringing our attention here, and it's straight, actually it's also in the commentary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is pointing out that this residing at Radhakund business, we're not talking about taking out this bag of flesh and finding ourselves a little room. That's not what we're talking about. What he's mentioning here is we're talking about spiritual body. A spiritual body that is experiencing spiritual emotions. Not only spiritual emotions, but aprakat, we're talking about transcendental, eternal emotions that the self-realized soul is going to experience. And we're not serving just any lila. We're not serving even maimitika lila. We're serving astakalya. That means we have made it to Golok. So it's not a cheap thing. Not a cheap thing to factually live on the banks of Radhakund. I wanted to have a look at this from another perspective because when we look at it on page 678, we're basically getting a chart that shows us a progression. And the chart starts with the Kamis, goes up to Kamis, Jnanis, Bhaktas, Gopis, and Srimati Radharani. So it's interesting information, and it is enlivening to see Srimati Radharani in the Gopis' position acknowledged and respected. But we want to look at things always in terms of what does it mean for me? What's the practicality for me? So I want to have a look at Rupa Goswami's, the teachings that Mahaprabhu gave to Rupa Goswami They're from Maria 19. We're going to have a look at page 716. Another map, but a very different map. And this map is based on Maria 19, 144 to 149. So here, because sometimes we fall into the illusion, I've always been human. It's just normal for me to be human. But we've been through so many species of life. And I was hearing in the second chapter of the 11th canto today that it's such a rare and precious gift to make it to human birth. And it's such an easy thing to lose it. So when we're looking at this, we can see that we're not talking about only humans, we were talking about the jiva, the soul. And we're looking at it right from first base. Animals, basically, that have power of motion or have no power of motion. And they are divided into three kinds of forms: birds, aquatic animals, and land animals. And then we come up to human beings. That's quite an advancement in itself. Now then, it's very interesting that we get those who follow the Vedic culture and we get those who don't. These days we're mainly talking about mlechadi. We're talking about mleches, people who don't follow any culture. And it's interesting to note that within the group that follow Vedic culture, though there are those who follow merely by giving lip service. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, like, talk about it. But there's also those who have true allegiance. And even amongst those who have true allegiance, there's those that just do it because they want to be pious, want to be known as a good person. There are those who do it for fruitive gain. There's the jnanis, there's the muktas, and there's the Krishna bhaktas. Now the interesting thing that I find about this chart in particular, because we don't get it in the other chart because it's not the emphasis, but I think we should be aware of it, is that Mahaprabhu, in 151 of 9th chapter, he says to Rupa Goswami, according to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down to the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. So the impetus for advancement, for progression, is the mercy of the spiritual master, which comes by the mercy of Krishna. And we see, if we go back to the previous chart, that we had many of the followers that Prabhupada attracted in the early days, and even now, were Vakamis. Gross Vakamis. But by his potency, they didn't have to go through Kami Gani. They didn't have to go through all the stages. Mm-hmm. He got them straight to the bhakti. Mm-hmm. It's so amazing. So we can see how powerful and how important it is to get the mercy of Sadhguru. Purely by my Prabhupada's mercy, having Prabhupada's shelter, we don't have to go through all these stages. We just have the elevator. We don't have to walk up all the steps. That's good news. But one thing I wanted to point out, which is very relevant these days, many of the pulpits to the 19th chapter of Madhya that I referred to in the other chart are very interesting. But I just wanted to read one today. It's the one about lip service. Because it's something we need to be careful about. We tend to become complacent. We tend to identify with this as me, but it's not what we're doing. We do so many things like that. So it's always good to sort of just sharpen our wits and see what we're really dealing with. So the verse is 146. Among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles considered civilized. Amongst these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. Such people do not care for the regulative principles. So this is the main thing that they have difficulty with, that they're whimsical. They can't actually accept the regulative principles that a guru is going to give. And that's why you find that most gurus don't give regulative principles. Anything goes, and there's, you know, things will work out, don't worry about it. But it wasn't Prabhupada's mood, because it's not the reality. So in Purport, Prabhupada says, the word Veda means knowledge. Supreme knowledge consists of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him, and acting according to that relationship. Action in accordance with the Vedic principles is called religion. Religion means following the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are the injunctions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aryans are civilized human beings who have been following the Vedic principles since time immemorial. The highest type of religious system is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6. The highest form of religion is that by which one becomes fully conscious of the existence of God, His form, name, qualities, pastimes, abode, and all pervasive features. When everything is completely known, that is the perfection of Vedic knowledge. The fulfillment of Vedic knowledge is systematic knowledge of the characteristics of God. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 15.15, Vidascha Sabayaham Eva Vidya. The aim of Vedic knowledge is to understand God. Those who are actually following Vedic knowledge and searching after God cannot commit sinful activities against the Supreme Lord's order. However, in this age of Kali, although men profess to belong to so many different kinds of religion, most of them commit sinful activities against the orders of the Vedic scriptures. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says that in this age, men may profess religion, but they actually do not follow the principles. Instead, they commit all kinds of sin. Now, what I wanted to point out that I find interesting about this purport is that where there's not an emphasis or a focus on the essence of true religion, naturally there will be sin, because there's no attraction. If there's no attraction, you can't give up lower habits. It's just the way it is. So Prabhupada is stressing here that the supreme science, the supreme knowledge, is understanding our relationship with Krishna, understanding who Krishna is in detail, knowing all aspects of God. And this is also said in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada explains it in his word for word and in his translations, that when Krishna is talking, Govindadeva is talking about supreme science, that supreme science is sambandha jnana. It's knowing our relationship with Krishna. So that's why it's very important in our practice of devotional service that we don't get caught up in just dry, you know, ritual and you know, doing things to feel like we're doing something. But rather, we have an idea that, okay, what Prabhupada has given is about me developing my relationship with Krishna, about me understanding who Krishna is. So then obviously we're not going to be dealing only with tattva. Tattva has its place, no doubt about it. Keeps the wild mind under control. Helps us in our preaching. But in essence, Prabhupada's Krishna book, for example. Such an important book. Even to learn how to follow in the footsteps of the Vrajavasis, there's no better handbook than Krishna book. So we really need to, what we're reading, where we're going, be conscious and asking yourself, is this helping me develop my relationship with Krishna? Am I finding out more about Krishna by doing this? If we don't regularly ask ourselves that question, we're going to become very lethargic and I'm going to fall into bad habits. Because there's no taste. There's no attraction. There's no pulling force. So, am I making sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make that point because I thought it was a pretty important one. So we can actually understand that from just reading this kind of thing, that we really have to be aware of how precious our present birth is. We really have to just not waste it. We really have to just see it for what it's worth and make the best of it. Okay, so now let's have a look at Prabhupada's purport, or excerpts from it, 679. At the present moment, almost everyone is engaged in some kind of fruitive activity. Those who are desirous of gaining material profits by working are called kamis, or field workers. Although such persons may be elevated to the heavenly planets by their pious activities, and although they may enjoy life there for many thousands of years, they nonetheless must return to this planet when the results of their pious activities are exhausted. Among the kamis, some are vikamis, people who act without the guidance of Vedic knowledge. Those who act on the basis of Vedic knowledge perform sacrifices for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu and to receive benedictions from him. In this way, they are elevated to higher planetary systems. Such karmis are superior to the vikarmis, for they are faithful to the directions of the Vedas and are certainly dear to Krishna. But one should be eager to understand the science of the soul, atmatattva. Unless one comes to the platform of atmatattva, by which one understands that the soul and not the body is oneself, one remains on the platform of ignorance. Out of thousands and even millions of ignorant people who are wasting their time simply gratifying their senses, one may come to the platform of knowledge and understand higher values of life. Such a person is called a jnani. The jnani knows that fruitive activities will bind him to material existence and cause him to transmigrate from one kind of body to another. Thus a jnani is considered superior to a kami because he at least refrains from the blind activities of sense enjoyment. However, though a jnani may be liberated from the ignorance of the kamis, unless he comes to the platform of devotional service, he is still considered to be in ignorance, avidya. Although one may be accepted as a jnani or one advanced in knowledge, his knowledge is considered impure because he has no information of devotional service and thus neglects the direct worship of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a jnani takes the devotional service, he rapidly becomes superior to an ordinary jnani. After taking to devotional service under the regular principles, a person may come to the platform of spontaneous love of God, following the footsteps of great devotees like Narada and Sunaka and Sanatana. The Supreme Person of Godhead then recognizes him to be superior. The devotees who have developed love of Godhead are certainly in an exalted position. Of all these devotees, the gopis are recognized as superior because they do not know anything other than satisfying Krishna. Nor do the gopis expect any return from Krishna. Indeed, sometimes Krishna puts them into extreme suffering by separating himself from them. Nonetheless, they cannot forget Krishna. Thus, of all the devotees who have developed unalloyed devotional love for Krishna, the gopis are most exalted, and out of all these exalted gopis, Srimati Radharani is the highest. No one can excel the devotional service of Srimati Radharani. Indeed, even Krishna cannot understand the attitude of Srimati Radharani. Therefore, he took her position and appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just to understand her transcendental feelings. In this way, Srila Rupa Goswami gradually concludes that Srimati Radharani is the most exalted devotee of Krishna and that her kund, lake, Shirada Kund, is the most exalted place. Therefore, everyone interested in Krishna consciousness should ultimately take shelter of Radhakund and execute devotional service there throughout one's life. This is the conclusion of Rupa Goswami in the 10th verse of Upadeshamrita. Now one thing, let's go back to the verse on 676. And there's one thing I want to point out to you about Prabhupada's translation. Prabhupada says the gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna. The translator countered by always, totally. That's pretty amazing. And they're not dependent on Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're dependent on Krishna, the cowherd boy. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. Now let's have a look at the core essence of what's being said here. We're looking at page 683. Just to consolidate what I was saying earlier. In translating Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Upadeshamrita, Srila Prabhupada writes, who then will not reside at Radhakund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, aprakat bhava, render loving service to the divine couple, Shishi Radha Govinda, who perform their Asakaliya Lila, their eightfold eternal daily pastimes. Now, just let's have a look at this. In a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, aprakat bhava, render loving service to the divine couple. So this clearly indicates that not only do we know our swarup, but we have reached a point where we can enter into the pastimes and engage in nitya seva. It's not a cheap thing that we're looking at when we're looking at. It's not, you know, like a lot of people these days particularly take things very cheaply, but to actually live on the banks of Radhakund is not a cheap thing. Not a cheap thing. So this is what we're looking at. Someone who actually is of this caliber. Not only have they realized their swarup, but they're actually able to work it. They can enter into the nitya lila and serve it. And they can do it at whim. So that's quite an amazing elevation that we're talking about. It's not a cheap thing. Second point, Sri Sri Radha Govinda who performed. This is actually not in the verse. It's something from Srila Prabhupada. Rupa Goswami doesn't mention Radha Govinda. So Sri Sri Radha Govinda, Srila Rupa Goswami's worshipable deities, the Abhideya Parangurus, the master and mistress of Golok. You have to remember Govinda is Adipurusham. We're looking at Golok, we're looking at Govinda Day. So here, very discreetly, Prabhupada has a very discreet way of saying things. So those who see it, and those who don't. But what he's saying here is, he's advising us to follow in Srila Rupa Goswami's footsteps, and that the meditation goal is Golok, not Gokul. So again, it's very, very high. And also the Astakaliya Lila, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes. This also confirms that the preoccupation and goal is Golok, entrance into Astakaliya Lila and Seva. So just I gave a couple of references here, one from a lecture by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and one from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Piyush Vasani Vritti commentary on this verse. Let's have a look at both. First from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The point is that one must forsake materialistic conceptions after attaining the aprakat body of the gopis. Aprakat living entities render aprakat service to aprakat Radha and aprakat Braj as the aprakat maid servants of Sri Radha in the transcendental grove on the bank of Aprakat Radha Kund. Just to make sure you get it clear. He had a way with words. like you said, I'm a social decorator. So in four lines you get it seven times. I think it should make it clear that we are not talking about what we see with our eyes, what we experience with our senses. We are talking actually the reality. And then Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he says something very similar in his commentary on the 11th verse. He says, in the transcendental end of Braj, apricot Braj, the transcendental end of the apricot Jiva, after having attained his transcendental gopi body, apricot gopi deha, has become situated at Radhakund in the kunj of a shaki, as a protector to maintain maidservant, Halyadasi, by the mercy of his, her, own spiritual master. Externally, having first taken continuous shelter of Nam, and being sheltered at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet, such a person who is expert in bhajan is attending Srimati Radhika in her Astakaliya Seva to Sri Krishna. Again, making it very, very clear. And I like this, this what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, because we're looking at the caliber of the sadhika vesh of such a person. Not only is he, fully realized and able to enter into Nityananda's seva, but we're getting an idea that he's sold out to Nam. He has full shelter of Mahaprabhu's feet. So it's not a cheap position that we're looking at. It's interesting just to catch an eye open of what we're looking at here, because you can, if you read without commentary or Upadesha Mrita, you're really going to make a lot of mistakes. A lot of people make a lot of mistakes. Even in Prabhupada's time, when Upadesha Mrita first came off the press and the devotees started reading it, there were a number of book distributors who decided it would be better to go and live at Radhakund. Because that's what it looked like from what Rupa Goswami said. But then when you, and that's why we translated the commentaries, because when you see what the acharyas say, it's a very different thing. So, you know, they're giving us the essence of what's being said. Okay, now let's turn over to 689. This is some more detail of the verse that Rupa has given, just to make it a little clearer. And it's from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktitravali. It's a collection of his works done by his disciples. First he quotes the verse, and then he begins talking about how pious workers are better than simple workers, non-workers, and foolish workers. Pious workers who are not interested simply in their own sense gratification, but engage in activities like giving charity, meditating, visiting holy places, and so on, are superior to those who do things that harm others or who steal, lie, commit adultery, and eat prohibited foods. Due to an excess of simple activities, it is impossible for human beings to live peacefully in this world. Still, the ideals of pious karmis are not of ultimate concern. I like the way Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes here, because quite often, from a position of thinking we're superior, we think and speak lowly of those engaged in karmic activity. But those who are, you know, have to realize a spade's a spade. So their position is far better, far more elevated than those, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, they harm others, they steal, they lie, commit adultery. So give them their due. Because if we talk to them in a condescending mood, in a negative mood, we're not going to actually do much, we're not going to be able to help them much. So if we realize that I'm actually talking to an elevated soul. He has made a conscious and clear decision of how he wants to live his life as a human being. Not a cheap thing. Especially in this age. Yeah.
I missed the point of it.
The point is that we can't afford just to say, oh, I karmis.
When you refer to karmis, means who are not... They're pious.
Yeah, and they're doing the things. So we don't want to be denigrate them or look down on them. but rather be aware that they are qualified to hear about Krishna. They're actually qualified to hear about Krishna because their heart is softened by their subject tendencies. Yeah, does that make sense? Mm. Pious workers are better than simple workers. A system of performing pious activities is meant to protect people from the clutches of waywardness and to diminish their propensity to indulge in sin. But all karmis want material enjoyment and are busy trying for material advancement in this life and to assure their happiness in the next. Those karmis who think themselves selfless are still covered by material desire, but they hide the desires for sense pleasure that live in the core of their hearts by practicing piety. Patriotism, giving food and cloth to the poor, constructing hospitals, digging ponds, giving water, and honoring guests. Jnanis, who search after spirit, are better than the karmis who are absorbed in matter. Karmis cannot see their own duplicity. Jnanis who want liberation are superior to karmis who want sense gratification. But even though jnanis are philosophical, and despite their understanding of the foolishness of karmis, they themselves may end up becoming attached to sinful activity if they try to stop karmis from pursuing fruitive activities. Jnanis should remember the statement in Bhagavad Gita, Nabhuri Bedam Janayed Aknam Karma Sanginam, so as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men attached to the fruitive results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. In other words, it is difficult to change the mentality of foolish persons attached out of ignorance to fruitive activities. If the jnanis try to stop them, they themselves will also become attached to temporary fruitive activities.
Does it mean that actually attachment, or is it more from the point of absorption? That if you're trying to stop someone, then you are just thinking about that.
That kind of absorption will lead to attachment. Because we always have to remember that attachment and aversion are two sides of the same coin. And very quickly they can change from one to the other. You quite often find that the fanatic brahmachari, you know, makes quite a good brahmani. You know, it's just the way, like, that swing is very quick. If there is any kind of fanaticism, any lack of balance, one side of the scale or the other, you can very easily swing over to the other side. Just the nature of the way the mind works. And yeah, we all experience, actually. You don't have to look outside, you just look at ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we think, okay, I'm going to do this from tomorrow. I'm going to not eat sweets from tomorrow. So for 3 days we eat no sweets, and the next day we binge. So that's the same thing. You know, you build up, it's not good for me, I should not eat sweets, it's very bad for me, I should, you know, some aversion to sweets. Mm-hmm. But very quickly, you swing straight back over the other side. Yeah? Mm. The karmis are foolish, the wise jnanis think. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and the results of their pious activity is exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. And they're thinking in terms of Bhagavad Gita 9:21. As a result of their pious actions, karmis enjoy heavenly pleasure according to the strength of their piety. Later, after enjoying immense pleasures in the heaven, and when their piety is exhausted, they again return to this mortal world. So considering all this foolishness on the karmis part, the jnanis in their wisdom try for more perpetual happiness and become interested in liberation. Thinking that life is miserable, they decide it's better to merge into the Brahman, which is free of spiritual variegatedness and all material dualities. These people are called jnanis, and they are those who seek the impersonal Brahman, the Mayavadis and the covered Buddhas. But how insignificant is their ambition? By competing with the foolish karmis and trying to pose as wise men, they actually end up becoming foolish. They destroy themselves. They cannot attain that complete eternal happiness for which they pretend to be renunciates and envy materialists. There are many philosophical speculators, jnanis, belonging to the Mayavada school, who consider themselves liberated and call themselves Narayan. But then intelligence is not purified unless they engage in Krishna's devotional service. The servants of the transcendental Supreme Lord are topmost. That is why the pure devotees are superior to all kinds of jnanis. A devotee's position is the highest. The foolish sense enjoyers or karmis thinks the devotees work just like them. Devotees ring the arti bell like the karmis do. They worship the Lord like they do. They show compassion toward other living beings like they do. They visit holy places and serve the saints like they do. But it is not actually like that. Karmis determine what is good or bad by examining things with their material senses. But a devotee's service is fully transcendental and cannot be perceived by the senses. Devotees have no desire to gratify their senses. Their only desire is to satisfy Krishna's senses. Now let's go over to part 2 on page 692. And here we're moving into who is more than Krishna in terms of the higher echelon of the map that Rupa Goswami has given us. This is all by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
I have a question.
Sure, no problem.
In this, we heard about the karmis, the jnanis, and the pure devotees.
Right.
But then the aspiring devotees, for example, if I tell for myself, so there are proclivities for the sense enjoyment also, so creative sense gratification is there.
Right.
So what is the situation? So is this like, I mean, progressive or how?
Definitely it's progressive if you have chosen to consciously follow a progressive path. So the thing is that why he's given karmis, jnanis and pure devotees is because all of us who are not at that platform just yet will be contaminated to different degrees by karma and jnana. That will be there.
Yes.
So we recognize that and we deal with it. It's not that we're going to become pure devotees just by thinking about it. We have to make some endeavor, and it has to be conscious, you know, like well-planned endeavor under shelter. And then it will have the effect.
But then, as you, Mataji, said that once we want that, okay, I want to do this way, for example, soft, sweet, example. But after some time, we get more, indulge in, say, sweet.
Right.
So same way, when we try to avoid certain things, for example, then I can feel experience what you just said. Uh-huh. So what is the right then way that actually to?
Yeah. This is why Rupa Goswami has very, very clearly given the principles of devotional service, so that we can shape our daily activity, even our mental activity, according to regulation. Because if we make extreme decisions, they're not going to carry weight. But if we are developing a sense of devotional culture by following what Rupa Goswami has given, then slowly, slowly, the heart will become pacified by that culture. The heart will become purified by that culture. And what was a big struggle a few years ago is not a big struggle anymore.
Yes.
Like that. So, you know, just little things. I mean, simple little things. Like, how many of us got up early before coming to devotional service? Most Indians like to look.
I did.
Rare soul. You know? But it's simple. Once you're in the regulation, it's just part of devotional life. And so unless you've got jet lag, you travel from America or something, you may sleep for a couple of days. But, you know, in general pattern of things, it's just your natural... And you don't even think about it. It's not a struggle for you. Once you get in the habit of only taking prasadam, you don't even have to think about it. It's just your habit. It's the way you like to do things. feels right to do it like that. So as you develop that culture supports you, and then you can move forward. Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why it's so important, you know, like to... and I mean, but, you know, Rupa Goswami really knows where Kali Yugians are at, you know.
Mm.
He even, you know, gives detail like, don't wear shoes in the temple. Don't quarrel in front of the deities. Don't pass air in front of the deities. You know? He's got to say these things because look what he's dealing with. But once we start following that and that becomes our culture, we become cultured. It's simple.
Also, Mataji, what you've been trying to teach us is that difficult things become easier if you pray about them.
For sure.
So if what I have been experiencing is that when I, under your guidance, when I really pray about something difficult, it somehow becomes manageable to tolerate the ups and downs when you're trying to improve the thing you're...
That's a fact. And you have to understand what's happening there when you pray. Because why is it difficult to make advancement in spiritual life? It's difficult, one, because in our self-envy we've reduced ourselves to 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. Where do we stand against the material energy? We're so tiny. And on top of that, we're covered. So what chance do you have? Now what you do when you pray is you link up with the real source. You express dependence on the real source. So you're not alone. The struggle is not a lone struggle anymore. You're connecting. Prabhupada often gives the example, not often, but a few times he gave the example of the kid who's, you know, like struggling to ride his bike up a steep hill. So tough. But a truck goes screaming by. And a bright boy. He just grabs onto the back of the truck. And what was such a laborious, hellish task 2 seconds ago is now a breeze. And it's not a big endeavor on his part. All he had to do was make the decision, I'm not going to depend on my own strength. It's killing me. I'm going to depend on Krishna. You take hold of his feet. It's so much easier. And a very, very practical day-by-day basis. Kids have been up, giving a hard time all night. They're sick. You're up all night. Doesn't mean you've had the same program in the morning. You still got to go to work, you still got to get things ready for school, everything has to go on. So you get up, everything's late, you feel groggy, no sleep, no brain. So you can go through life like that. You can go through the morning like that. Or you can go to your deities, you can go to your guru days, you can go to Prabhupada and say, I'm a mess. I've got the same things to do, but I'm not the same person this morning. I am a mess. Can you help me? I'm depending on you. It works. You'll see things. You know, like you get up 2 hours late, you go to Prabhupada, you pray. All of a sudden you get the same things done. You somehow stretch the time. It's quite something. So prayer is very, very powerful, and you have to be aware of why it's so powerful. It's connecting you to the most powerful, the one who can help you most. So why do you want to be this tiny, insignificant little mustard seed trying to swim across an ocean? Any chance of that? More likely to sink before you get across.
Yeah.
But it's so powerful, prayer. It's very, very powerful. So powerful. Any other thoughts or questions about that? Okay. So let's read from 6:9-3 after the restatement of the verse, Rupa's 10th verse. Only the most fortunate live with pure hearts in the most sanctified place, Radhakund, and worship Krishna 24 hours a day. Here we're getting a real picture of what it means to live at Radhakund. Pure heart, 24 hours a day. Radhakund is the highest section of Golok, the most confidential place in the spiritual sky, and the only shelter for devotees on the platform of Madhurya Rasa. The planetary systems Bhuva, Bhuva, and Spa are meant for pious householders. Above them are the planetary systems Maha, Janatapa, and Satcha, meant for the celibates. Upakovana Brahmacharis live in Mahaloka. Naisika Brahmacharis attain Janaloka. Vanaprasthas attain Tapaloka. And Sannyasis enjoy in Satyaloka. The Bhagavad Gita states, from the highest planet in the material world to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. The one who attains my abode, the son of Kunti, never takes birth again. But that ecstatic spiritual abode of Vaikuntha is rarely attained even by liberated souls. Immediately after leaving their corporal tabernacles, the Lord's devotees who are free from material desire attain that abode. Mathura is superior to Vaikuntha, Vrindavan the abode of the Rasalila is superior to Mathura. Govardhan is superior to Vrindavan and Radhakund is best of all. Srila Sanatana Goswami Prabhu's explanation that the Lord's abode is three-fourths of the creation is the most scientific. The impersonal Brahman is situated beyond the causal ocean. Impersonalists think that ultimately there is nothing there. They suppose that all the imaginary gods as well as the imaginary form of Brahman will emerge, having become one. Mahaprabhu says, impersonal descriptions in the Vedas are meant to establish that everything in spiritual existence is transcendental and free of mundane characteristics. So it goes on quite a lot to talk about all this kind of thing. Let's have a look from the last paragraph on 695, where we start to look at Srimati Radharani's supreme position. Among the gopis, Srimati Radhika is supreme. She is the principal among the group leaders headed by Lalita and Vishakha. By great good fortune, one gains entry into Lalita's group. That is why today those who desire to circumambulate Sri Radhakund try to live on the banks of Lalitakund. Some people adjudge Chandravali as leading gopi, that the highest achievement is to gain an opportunity to surrender as a maidservant to Sri Radha, the personification of Mahabhav. Sri Radha's name is mentioned only covertly in Srimad Bhagavatam because the author feared that this literature would fall into the hands of materialists. Yet the most magnanimous Sri Gaurasunda and my spiritual master Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhu have revealed information about Sri Radha without hiding it from qualified devotees. Padma Puran states, just as Srimati Radharani is dearest to Krishna, her kund is similarly dear. Of all the gopis, she is the most beloved of the Lord. I want to explore this a little bit more, this unique position of Srimati Radharani. So let's have a look at some things from Prabhupada's Ali Lila. We're looking at page 701. Little gems that can really let us catch a clear idea of what we're looking at when we're taking darshan of Srimati Radharani. Such a very, very, very amazing person. Each kind of devotee feels that his sentiment is the most excellent, and in that mood he tastes great happiness with Lord Krishna. But if we compare the sentiments in an impartial mood, we find that the conjugal sentiment is superior to all others in sweetness. Increasing love is experienced in various tastes, one above another. But that love which has the highest taste in the gradual succession of desire manifests itself in the form of conjugal love. Therefore I call it Madhura Rasa. It has two further divisions, namely wedded and unwedded love. There is a great increase of mellow in the unwedded conjugal mood. Such love is found nowhere but in Braj. This mood is unbounded in the damsels of Braj, but among them it finds its perfection in Shirada. Her pure, mature love surpasses that of all others. Her love is the cause of Lord Krishna's tasting the sweetness of the conjugal relationship. Most of this is from Adi 4. The essence of Vadini potency is love of God. The essence of love of God is emotion, bhava. And the ultimate development of emotion is mahabhava. Sri Radha Thakurani is the embodiment of mahabhava. She is a repository of all good qualities and the crest jewel among all the lovely consorts of Lord Krishna. Of these two gopis, Radharani and Chandravali, Srimati Radharani is superior in all respects. She is the embodiment of mahabhava and she surpasses all in good qualities. Her mind, senses and body are steeped in love for Krishna. She is Krishna's own energy and she helps him in his pastimes. Radha is the one who gives pleasure to Govinda and she is also the enchantress of Govinda. She is the be-all and end-all of Govinda and the crest jewel of all his consorts. The transcendental goddess Srimati Radharani is the direct counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna. She is a central figure for all the goddesses of fortune. She possesses all the attractiveness to attract the all-attractive personality of Godhead. She is the primeval, eternal potency of the Lord. Her worship, Aradhana, consists of fulfilling the desires of Lord Krishna. Therefore, the Puranas call her Radhika. Radha is Param Devata, the Supreme Goddess, and she is worshipable for everyone. She is the protectress of all, and she is the mother of the entire universe. Among the gopis, Srimati Radhika is the foremost. She surpasses all in beauty, in good qualities, in good fortune, and above all, in love. Just as Radha is dear to Lord Krishna, so her bathing place, Radhakund, is dear to him. She alone is his most beloved of all the gopis. Upata and all the three planetary systems, this earth is especially fortunate. For on earth is the town of Vrindavan, and there the gopis are especially glorious, because among them is my Srimati Radharani. All the other gopis help increase the joy of Krishna's pastimes with Radharani. The gopis act as the instruments of their mutual enjoyment. Radha is the beloved consort of Krishna, and she is the wealth of his life. Without her, the gopis cannot give him pleasure. So let's have a listen to what Krishna has to say. We've heard what Krishna Das Kaviraj and Prabhupada have to say. What does Krishna have to say? We're looking at page 718. Again, this is from Adi 4. Krishna speaking. All the world derives pleasure from me. Is there anyone who can give me pleasure? One who has 100 times more qualities than me could give pleasure to my mind. One more qualified than me is impossible to find in the world. But in Radha alone, I feel the presence of one who can give me pleasure. Although my beauty defeats the beauty of 10 million cupids, although it is unequaled and unsurpassed, and although it gives pleasure to the three worlds, seeing Radharani gives pleasure to my eyes. The vibration of my transcendental flute attracts the three worlds, but my ears are enchanted by the sweet words of Srimati Radharani. Although my body lends fragrance to the entire creation, the scent of Radharani's limbs captivates my mind and heart. Although the entire creation is full of different tastes because of me, I am charmed by the nectarian taste of the lips of Srimati Radharani. And although my touch is cooler than 10 million moons, I am refreshed by the touch of Srimati Radharani. Thus, although I am the source of happiness for the entire world, the beauty and attributes of Sri Radhika are my life and soul. I am the full spiritual truth and am made of full joy, but the love of Srimati Radharani drives me mad. I do not know the strength of Radha's love, with which she always overwhelms me. The love of Radhika is my teacher, and I am her dancing pupil. Her prem makes me dance various novel dances. It's so very, very beautiful. So, I guess when we read about Srimati Radhika's amazing position, sooner or later we're going to think, wow, I really like to be serving her. So close to Krishna, so pleasing to Krishna. What's the value of my service compared to her service? Where do I serve her? So let's have a look at something that Bhagavad Gita course says. He picks up on this mood. It's on page 703. It's such a beautiful, it's very, very brief, but it's very beautiful. When will that day come when we will be qualified to engage in the most wonderful, eternal, nectarian service? Notice the words, the adjectives. Wonderful, eternal, nectarian service. Is that how we think of service right now? Huh? Oh, I better do it again. Oh. So cold. Wonderful, eternal, nectarian service. Ashishi Radha Govinda, under the shelter of Shri Radha as our divine mistress. To achieve that service, we will have to give up like crows' excrement, our desire for material enjoyment. The insignificant fruit of activity is mentioned in the Smriti. The attachment to insignificant, impersonal knowledge, austerity, mystic yoga, and so on. Now here, it's very interesting. The way, the angle of vision that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is giving here on Rupa Goswami's verse. Because Rupa Goswami is just saying, Kamis, Jnanis, Bhaktas, Radha. But what Bhaktisiddhanta is saying here is, okay, she's the top. If you're aspiring for her service, you have to give up every trace. Every trace of what it means to be a Kami, every trace of what it means to be a Jnani, every trace of what it means to be a Mishra Bhakta. Not a cheap thing. Not a cheap thing. Attainment of Sri Radha's service is not possible when one is full of anattas. Those who hurry to discuss the transcendental pastimes of Sri Radha, who's the topmost maidservant of Krishna, while still full of anattas and without qualification, a sense enjoys, illusion enjoys the matter and mundane sahajas. And Sri Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma prays to Sri Govinda. Now this is an amazing translation. It's a Pramanjana Chodha Bhakti Balochanena verse. But the translation that Bhakti Siddhanta gives you is really quite something. Have a listen to it. The transcendental form of Lord Shyamasunda, who possesses inconceivable qualities, is seen with eyes anointed with love of God. The loving devotees who are free from anatta susila govinda. Now this is a very interesting point, because anattas are like cataracts on the eyes. Anattas are like cataracts on the eyes. You cannot see things as they are because of the cataracts, because of the anattas. Therefore, only those fortunate persons who are free from anattas and worship Sri Krishna as servants of Sri Radha can plunge into Sri Radha Kund. Isn't that amazing? He really wants to drive it home, and it's not about jumping into the water, folks. I'm sorry. It's not about that. Just read it again. Therefore, only those fortunate persons who are free from anattas and worship Sri Krishna as servants of Sri Radha. Not direct. Not direct servants. Servants of Radha. They can plunge into Sri Radha Kund. And only they attain the good fortune of serving Sri Radha Govinda 24 hours a day. Only they are most glorious. Very, very amazing. Super amazing. Okay. I wanted to take a look at the commentary of Bhaktisiddhanta's commentaries in particular, because they give some interesting insight in what we've been reading about that we might not have caught. Let's have a look at his bhasa first, where he's just explaining it in words suitable for the audience. This is on page 687. Just little things, the clarifications he makes, which are very helpful. Upadeshamita Bhasa, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Pious karmis who are in the mode of goodness. Not just pious karmis, he's making a distinction here. Pious karmis who are in the mode of goodness are glorified as being dear to Lord Hari by all those who are dharmic. Very interesting statement. Those who are not only pious karmis, but they're in the mode of goodness. They're seen as dear to Krishna by those who are dharmic. Not just by anybody. But those who actually know Dharma, they will see those people as dear to Krishna. So to be in mode of goodness these days is quite an achievement. Especially in this cold weather. Think about it when you cover yourself with that blanket tonight. The jnanis are dearer to Lord Hari than the karmis because they do not scheme for their own happiness and enjoyment. Isn't that interesting? The angle he's giving. Not just the cut and dry, the activities. But he's talking about the mentality, the scheming. The karmis are scheming. Making more money, more happiness, more enjoyment, more fixed deposits, more this, more that. Yeah? Scheming. So the jnanis are dear to Lord Hari and the karmis because they don't do that. Because when you're scheming for your own happiness and enjoyment, you're preoccupied with yourself. Completely preoccupied with yourself and your tiny little out world. Yeah? So where's Krishna in that picture? He's just not there. So he's saying the jnanis are better than that. When a jnani gives up jnana mishabhava and becomes liberated and takes pushala parabhakti, transcendental devotional service, he becomes dear to Lord Hari. Dearer than a person who is endowed with bhakti is he who has prem. Even dearer to Lord Hari than those who have prem are the gopis. Dearer than the gopis is Sri Radhika, who is Krishna's most beloved. And Sri Radha's lake is as dear to Lord Hari as she is. Which bewildered fool would want to serve Sri Hari residing elsewhere and reject the shelter of this Kund? Very, very interesting what he's saying here. Because Kund is not different than Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani, all devotional service is done under his shelter. Who's going to reject his shelter? Who's going to reject that shelter? And then in his Anavritti, which is a short commentary, in comparison to those jivas who act according to their own whims, pious workers and the mode of goodness are dear to Lord Krishna. In comparison to such kamis, the Jnani who has transcendental knowledge and is free from the three modes is dear to Krishna. So here we get a little bit more of an insight that the Jnani who is dear to Krishna not only has transcendental knowledge, but he's not in the three modes. That's an indication of being in transcendental knowledge, that you're not under the three modes. Huh? This goes hand in hand. In comparison to the Jnani, the pure devotee is dearer to Sri Krishna. In comparison to the pure devotee, the devotee is firmly fixed in prem, is dearer to Sri Krishna. In comparison to those firmly fixed in prem, the beautiful damsels of Braj are dearer to Krishna. In comparison to the beautiful damsels of Braj, Srimati Vashavanavi, the beautiful daughter of King Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani, is most dear to Sri Krishna. Just as Srimati Radhika is most beloved to Sri Krishna, so is her kund. The devotee of Krishna who has received unparalleled good fortune takes shelter of this very same Sri Radha kund with the mood that this kund is his exclusive shelter. Very, very high. Very, very high. Okay, so I thought we'd spend a bit of time just taking a look at some beautiful bhajans on Srimati Radharani and some prayers also, which are very, very beautiful. Let's begin with page 706. This is from Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Gitavali. Just to get a little bit of an idea of who this Srimati Radharani is doing special, who is she? Who is she? We've heard how exalted she is, how special she is, but who is she? Let's find out a little bit about her. The beloved daughter of King Vrishabhanu is a crest jewel of all young women. She is fond of wearing blue garments. Any guess why?
It's Krishna's colors blue.
Yes. Krishna's color is blue. Her radiant complexion is very pleasing and conquers the beauty of freshly cut gold. Her locks of hair are nicely arranged and she is the life and soul of Lord Krishna. Whose daughter is she?
Krishna.
Ali Vrishabhanu?
I'm Kirtika.
Okay. What color is she fond of wearing?
Blue.
What's the color of her complexion?
Gold.
Gold. Freshly cut gold.
Freshly cut gold. Okay. She is artfully adorned with jewels. She is very learned in the science of Hari Rasa, and her forehead is nicely decorated with tilak. Her breasts are covered with a beautiful kancholi and adorned with valuable gems, and her eyes are anointed with black kajal. Thus she appears to be a relative of sweetness personified. Giving up everything and becoming a maid servant at the lotus feet of Radha, just worship and serve her with great care and attention. Beholding her effulgent rays of pure beauty, the goddesses Rati, Gauri and Leela abandon all their pride. The good fortune attributed to the goddesses Sachi, Lakshmi and Satya is completely defeated in the presence of Radha's feet. The group of rival gopis led by Chandravali are forced to accept their defeat before Srimati Radharani, for she alone controls Krishna. Thus they always sulk and simply remain quarrelsome. I think he may be a bit biased in his presentation. It is after a Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Bhakti Vinod, a resident of Sri Godrum, always endeavors for the lotus feet of Radha, the most beloved of Lord Hari. This next bhajan is a very beautiful bhajan. It's also from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Gitavali. If your desire for the worship of Srimati Radharani does not come about, then your so-called worship of Krishna is completely useless. Just as I never know the sun to be without sunlight, so do I not care to regard Madhava without Radha. Shakta and Shaktiman, you can separate. How can you worship Krishna independent of Radha? You can't do it. One who worships Madhava alone is imperfect in his knowledge, and one who disrespects Radha is simply conceited and proud. You should never associate with such a person if you have all desire within your heart to participate in the eternal sporty pastimes of Raj. If one considers oneself to be a humble maidservant of Radhika, then such a person very quickly meets the Lord of Gokul. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Narad Muni, the personified Vedas and Lakshmi Devi all honor and worship the dust of Radhika's lotus feet. The Vedic scriptures declare that the goddesses Uma, Rama, Satya, Sachi, Chandra and Rukmini are all personal expansions of Srimati Radharani. Bhaktivinoda, whose only treasure is the service of such a Radha, humbly begs for her lotus feet. The next one is a very, very beautiful work from Narottam Das Thakur's Prem Bhakti Chandrika. It's a section within that work called Radhika Chanarenu, and it's dealing with Radhika Shrai, or taking shelter of Srimati Radharani. Very beautiful and very practical. Decorate your body with the dust from the lotus feet of Sri Radhika. Then you will achieve the full grace of Sri Krishna, the lift of Govind. While you take shelter of the lotus feet of Radhika, I glorify him as a great person. All glories to the holy names of Sri Radha, who eternally resides in Vrindavan. She is the ocean of Krishna's happiness. I have been cheated by providence because I have not heard about the glorification of Radha. One who associates with the devotees of Sri Radha and discusses the loving pastimes of Radha certainly meets Shyam Sundar. Anyone adverse to this never attains perfection, and I do not wish to even hear the name of such a person. O brother, simply by chanting the names of Krishna, one can receive the lotus feet of Radhika, and by chanting the names of Radhika, one can receive the lotus feet of Krishna. Thus I have briefly explained everything by which you will be relieved from the pains in your heart. All other topics are full of miseries and dualities. It's so beautiful. So just, it's so beautiful. Hare Krishna Mahamantra is so amazing. Yeah. Just, you know, you're constantly glorifying Radha, glorifying Krishna, glorifying Radha. So very, very beautiful. Give up false ego and pride. Give up bad association and giving up bad association and endeavoring for useless material knowledge. Worship the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Surrender your body, home and family members unto him. The words from the lotus mouth of the spiritual master are supremely important. This is something that Narottam Das Thakur does quite frequently through Prema Bhakti Chandrika. He talks very, very high topics and invites you into those high topics, but he concludes by saying, take shelter of the spiritual master. Hear from the spiritual master. Serve the spiritual master. Because that's the way you do it. That's actually the way you do it. We don't have any access. Her ambassador is the spiritual master. So by serving him, then we become qualified. Let's turn over now to page 711. These are some very, very beautiful prayers. This first one is from the Pancharatra Pradeep, which was the deity worship book put out by the GBC Press, ISKCON GBC Press. Beautiful Srimati Radharani is the queen and the origin of the Rasa events. She is the giver of pleasure to Krishna. There is a super soul in the hearts of all. She is a lover of Krishna and is always situated upon the chest of Krishna. She is the presiding deity of Krishna's very life, and as she is the first of all persons, the energy of Lord Vishnu, the embodiment of truthfulness, eternal and ever youthful. Her form is spiritual, therefore she is transcendental and beyond mundane qualities. She is divine energy and is unattached. O Radha, in Vrindavan you are the leader of the gopis and you reside on the banks of the Viraj River. She is a resident of Golok Vrindavan and is a cowherd damsel. She is the queen of the gopis and the divine mother of the cowherd boys. She is joyful and always experiencing the highest bliss, and she incites lusty desires in the heart of the son of Nanda. Radha is the daughter of Maharaj Vrishabhanu. She is very peaceful and lovely. She is completely contented and fulfilled, very pleasing, and is the daughter of Kalavati. She is a purifier of the Tirthas, holy places, and she is most auspicious and most chaste to Lord Krishna. O Radha, I have fallen into the horrible ocean of birth and death and I am frightened, but I am seeking your shelter. O Queen of the demigods, please free me from all fears. O Radhika, please give me transcendental devotional service to your lotus feet, for I shall worship by Lord Brahma and Lakshmi, which are served even by Lord Krishna. O Srimati Radharani, offer my respects to you. His bodily complexion is like molten gold. O Goddess, you are the queen of Vrindavan. You are the daughter of King Vrishabhanu and are very dear to Lord Krishna. O Srimati Radharani, you are exalted form of Mahabal. Therefore you are most dear to Krishna. O Goddess, you alone are able to restore pure love to the Supreme Lord. Therefore I offer my humble obeisances unto you. This next section of verses is from Prabodhananda Saraswati's Radharasa Sudha Nidhi. It's a very, very beautiful verses. Just a selection of verses. 7-12. Obeisances to the direction that faces Sri Vrishabhanu's daughter. When the breeze coming from that direction playfully moves the edge of his garment, Lord Krishna, who cannot be attained by even the kings of the yogis, thinks that his life has now become a great success. It's so beautiful. A young boy in love. I meditate on the dust of Sri Radha's feet. Thus that even Brahma, Shiva, Sukadev, Narad, Bhishma, and a host of great saints cannot see. Thus it has limitless power. Thus that at once transforms the Supreme Person of Godhead into Sri Radha's submissive servants. I meditate on the dust of Sri Radha's feet, dust that becomes a kamandenu cow to give the nectar of rasa as the devotees celebrate a festival of spiritual love. Placing this dust on their heads, the beautiful gopis attain something even peacock feather crown Krishna yearns to attain. Oh my heart, please turn from the great things of this world and run to Vrindavan, where the great treasure, the nectar flood that delivers the devotees from this world, is Sri Radha's name. May Sri Radha, who is the personified nectar ocean of perfect spiritual love, and the splendor of whose Chandra counted your toenails glistens amongst the gopis, be merciful to me. I pray that my heart may find its happiness in Radha's pastime forest, where the vines bear flowers picked by Radha's own hands, where many charming places bear Radha's footprints, and where the birds passionately sing of Radha's glories. May she, Radha, who is an ocean of intelligence, a nectar ocean of love, an ocean of kind affection, an ocean of great mercy, an ocean of beauty, an ocean of nectar and splendor, and an ocean of transcendental pastimes is here in my heart. Would you like to read the next one, Sidrani?
Yes, ma'am. The moonlight of bliss. Radha, who is dear to Lord Damodar, his great worshipper, the daughter of King Brijbhanu, she who is the crowning garland of Mallika flowers on the decorated braided hair of all the gopis, the first of Krishna's beloveds, an expert singer and musician, Lalita's friend, she who is delighted with the friendship of Vishakha, the flower blossom that attacks the black bee of Lord Hari's heart. He who reads this confidential prayer, which bears the title Anand Chandrika, the moonlight of bliss, and which is beautiful with 10 names of the Queen of Vrindavan, becomes free of all troubles and decorated with great good fortune. He quickly becomes the object of Sri Sri Radha Madhava's mercy.
Wonderful. I'm going to move on to another meditation now. This is a meditation on Radha's love for Krishna. Because when we talk about Radha being the greatest lover of Krishna, the question that comes up, well, what's the nature of her love? Doesn't it make sense? What made that her love? What makes her so special? What's so special about her love? So I want to have a look at page 808. Very intense meditations, but very beautiful also. When Krishna left for Mathura, these are both from Gogavinda Maharaj's Embankment of Separation. When Krishna left Vrindavan for Mathura, Srimati Radharani became overwhelmed with Adiruddha Mahabhav, a highly advanced state of ecstatic love which resembles the dying condition. One day, by the plan and arrangement of Yoga Maya, the whole of Braj Bhumi became overwhelmed with the thought, Radha is dying. This time she will not survive. Tormented by anxiety, all the Brajavasis ran to Nidavan, where Srimati Radharani was lying on the ground with her head resting on the palms of Lalita's hands. Her Astashakis were sitting all around her. They could not understand what to do. Lalita and Vishakha were very restless. Sometimes they were singing the name of Krishna in the ears of Radha, and sometimes they would take some cotton and hold it in front of her nostrils to test whether or not she was still breathing. Suddenly, Patila, Abhimanyu's sister, came forward. She is a sister-in-law of Radharani. Crying and shedding tears, Patila put her head on the lotus feet of Radharani. She took some dust from Radha's lotus feet and put it on her head. Married ladies who are not widowed put vermilion on the parting of their hair, chinti. So Patila put some dust in the lotus feet of Radha as vermilion on that chinti. With a choked voice she said, O Radha, I am very fortunate today. I got the opportunity to put some dust from your lotus feet on my chinti. Today I really became sati, a chaste lady. I had great pride, yes, as great as a skyscraper, Akash Kumbhi. I was always proclaiming, I am the only chaste lady. There is no other chaste ladies in Brajabhumi. All are prostitutes. I used to say that, and I have tried my best to prove that you are a great prostitute and that you have no chastity at all. Although you married my brother, you are always running to Krishna. So I have tried my best to prove that you are the most unchaste and that I am the most chaste. But once a very mysterious thing happened. One day, Krishna manifested Advara Lila as if he was very sick with a high fever. Krishna was overcome with a disease. Sannyas robe. I will give up everything and take up sannyas. This fever had come. All were in anxiety. How would this be cured? What is the medicine for you? Oh yes, I know the medicine. What is that medicine? If there is some sati sadvi, a lady who is very chaste and pure, only she can supply the medicine. Let her go to the Jamuna carrying a pot that has hundreds of holes. If she can bring back some water from the Jamuna in that pot, another single drop of water falls down. And that is the medicine. If you put that water on my body, I'll be cured of this fever. Kutila continued. All decided that I was the most chaste lady. I was always beating drums and proclaiming, I am the most chaste lady, and all others are unchaste. So they said, all right, call her and give her the pot with hundreds of holes. Let her bring water from the Jamuna without spilling a single drop. But when I tried to do it, all the water poured out. That proved that I was not chaste at all. Kutila admitted, it was conclusive evidence. My pride was completely crushed. That is why Krishna manifested such a Advara Lila. Just to crush my pride. Then Radha was called. Let us give that pot to Radharani. Let her bring water. When Radharani went to the Jamuna to fetch water, although the pot had hundreds of holes, not a single drop fell out. Kutila continued. So it was proved to the whole world that you are the real chaste lady, not I. Yogamaya created that Leela just to crush my pride. Oh Radha, my pride was crushed. But today, I am very proud to have had the opportunity to take some dust from the lotus feet. My life has become successful today. Then from another direction, Chandravali came running. She was followed by her shakis, headed by Saivya. Chandravali came and fell flat, putting her head on the lotus feet of Radharani. Washing the lotus feet of Radharani with the tears from her eyes, she said, Radhe, I am the most condemned person in Brajabhumi. It is not you who are condemned, but I. In Braj, everyone is condemning Radharani. Everyone says, oh, she is a prostitute. On the plea of fetching water, she's going to the Jamuna only to meet with Krishna. Who is not going to Jamuna to fetch water? Everyone is going. But when Radha goes, suddenly she becomes a prostitute. They accuse Radharani this way. But Chandravali said, no, I am condemned. You are not condemned. Oh Radharani, Shri Krishna is your real husband. You are leftist. So sometimes Krishna goes to my kunj just to increase your leftist mood. That is my good fortune. In that way, I am related to you. Today, I am very fortunate that I could put my head at your lotus feet. O Radha, though I am very eager to fulfill the desires of Krishna, still I am most distressed and condemned. I have become a cause of taking Krishna away from you. Krishna is your husband. Sometimes Krishna goes to my kunj, but he's not happy with me. He's only happy with you. Even in dreams, he only thinks of you. He never thinks of me. It is said that while Krishna is with Chandravali, he thinks of associating with Radha. He never thinks of Chandravali. He never gets such pleasure or happiness when he is with her. Chandravali said, "This is all Leela created by Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya has made everyone dance here in Brajabhumi. And for the pleasure of Krishna, in whatever way she made us dance, we all danced. I know it very well. Everyone here is engaged in nourishing the Leela of Krishna, nothing else. But today, I've heard that you're in a dying condition. If you give up your body, then no one in Brajabhumi will survive. Or rather, not even a single animal. Everyone will die. Then Krishna will never come to Brajabhumi. We will never see Krishna again. Please don't die." So beautiful. So beautiful. I want to take it a little bit closer to our acharyas now by having a look at some beautiful prayers to Srimati Radhika by Raghunath Das Goswami. These are on page 812. Very, very beautiful prayers from very notable works. These are very, very high meditations. Very, very high. "O Queen, I shall never ask you for anything other than the excellent service of your lotus feet. Again and again, I offer my respectful obeisances to the idea of becoming your friend, but I only aspire to become your maidservant." This is a very interesting little section of Vilap Kusmanjali, when Radharani teases Rakhi Manji, who is Raghunath Das Goswami, says, "Don't you want to become my friend? Wouldn't it be nice to be my friend?" So she's teasing her like that. But then Raghunath Das Goswami's answer is, "I pay my respectful obeisances to the idea of becoming your friend." But it's not what I want. "I want to be your maidservant. I worship Lotus Eyed Radha. I meditate on sweetly smiling Radha. I glorify supremely merciful Radha. She is the only goal of my life. I have no other goal. O beautiful one, when will the sound of your anchor bells sprinkling drops from an ocean of nectar cure my deafness? O Queen, with my eyes and ears, will I ever serve the nectar of your words scented with the canter of your smile? O beautiful lake, my Queen eternally enjoys amorous pastimes with her beloved on your shore. You are most near and dear to him. O please mercifully show me now that girl who is my very, very life and soul." This chant was very, very dear to Raghunath Das Goswami and also Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very special meditation. Kotai Gaur Prema Mayi. "O Radha, O you who are full of divine love, where are you? O glorious Radha, O glorious Radha." They used to walk around bridge like madmen, chanting this. "O Radha, please grant me your vision and save my life. Your wretched beggar calls out to you. O Radha, O Radha. O Radha, the enjoyer of amorous pastimes in the forest of Vrindavan, wherein you enchant the mind of Krishna. O Radha, you're the crest jewel among the eight principal Shakis. O daughter of King Vrishabhana, O Radha, O Radha." Raghunath Das Goswami daily calls out to you, "O Radha, O Radha." Sometimes he calls out, "O Radha, O Radha" at Keshigat, and sometimes at Bangsivat. He sometimes calls out at Nidavan, and sometimes at Sevakunj, "O Radha, O Radha." He sometimes calls out at Radhakund, and sometimes at Shamkund, "O Radha, O Radha." He sometimes calls out at Kusum Sarovar, and sometimes at Govardhan, "O Radha, O Radha." He sometimes calls out at Taliban and sometimes at Tamalaban. Oh Radha, oh Radha. Raghunath wears just a simple, dirty looking cloth because he's always rolling in the dust of Braj, calling out, oh Radha, oh Radha. While his mouth is calling the names of Radha, tears are pouring from his eyes. Oh Radha, oh Radha. He wanders from place to place in Vrindavan, crying and calling out, oh Radha, oh Radha. Throughout the day and night, he knows nothing but Radha and Govinda. Oh Radha, oh Radha. He lies down for only an hour and a half each night, and even in his sleep, he dreams only of Radha and Govinda. Oh Radha, oh Radha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare
Krishna, 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 Krishna